Session number 26588.
Yeah.
Alec Wingrave, reel 2.
When I joined in at Whitehall, a big ship berth attendant came in, and there were about 20 or 24 of us standing around, and he said, "Right, strip off to see the doctor," and off he went through another door. When he came back, I was the only one that was in the state that I was born in. And he looked at me and said, oh, he swore at all the others and said, "If you can't take an order like strip off, what good are you to the Navy?" And he looked at me and he said, "Are you a sportsman?" I said, "Yes, sir." Of course, everybody was sir when you joined. I said, "Yes, sir." I said, he said, "What sport?" I said, "Cycling." He said, "Oh, that'll get you a long way in the Navy." But of course, I was football as well. And racing, we used to race at Brooklands, and there were communal bars there. So it was nothing to strip off, and but I was the only one that was naked as he asked us to be. And so it never embarrassed me because of my sporting activities. But when you got to sea, it didn't make any difference because there was only one bathroom for each rank, and everybody got to the door, took their things off and put them in racks, and went into the bathroom to shower. If you were lucky enough to have showers, if you were in a bigger ship, you had showers, but the small ships didn't have showers, of course.
What about the discipline side of things?
That didn't worry me either. I could take an order because in sport you had to be disciplined, and so it didn't worry me really. I just fell in with it. The day I joined the for training on the parade ground, we fell in first in the gymnasium, and the chief PTI looked up and down the line of about 150 of us, and he said, "Who can ride a bike?" So I thought, "Oh, here's a quiet number, messenger." So I said, "I can, chief, racing cyclist." He said, "Right, there's 40 brooms there. You've got the first choice," and everybody roared with laughing. They thought that was funny, to my detriment. But from then on, you just fell in with it. And I was able to take command of classes. Everybody in the class had to take command when you were on the parade ground at different times, that your chief instructor would just point to you and say, take charge. And you'd have to march them up and down and about turn. And we had one fellow who was a comic, and instead of saying halt, he used to say whoa. And that always caused a laugh. But it didn't worry me. I fell into it straight away. And I've always been disciplined anyway. I am now.
Did you ever get into trouble?
Only I had trouble with getting back aboard on time. I was unlucky with two or three ships that where our liberty boat was about 10 yards off the jetty. And she was on her way out to the ship, and so that was the only trouble I had. I didn't have any trouble with discipline in ships, except that I missed the boats two or three times.
What happened to you then?
Well, it depends how long it is before you get back aboard. You usually got 10 days stoppage of leave and a day's pay, but that didn't make a lot of difference. The corvette I was on, we had a commander who lived in the same village as my parents at Yule, and he had a sense of humour. If you did anything wrong, he'd give you a standover, and that meant you could carry on going ashore. And when you got to sea, he'd give you 10 day stoppage of leave, and you might be at sea 30 days. So that was we never, and of course in submarines it was a different thing again. So we didn't have a problem with discipline in submarines. It was self-discipline.
How did you keep in contact with your family when you were training?
Writing, and I still remember it was 8 shillings and fourpence return on the train from Portsmouth to Epsom. So I could usually afford that, or if I couldn't, my parents could. And I used to write once a week, because in the Navy you had to write to your next of kin. We had a chap in one ship I was in, he hadn't written home for over a year, and his mother wrote to the Admiralty because she didn't know even what ship he was on, and he was in trouble, and he got commander's report, and then the commander put him in captain's report, and that was on an aircraft carrier, and he had to write a letter once a month and take it to the captain, and the captain read it and posted it, because in the Navy you had to keep in touch with your next of kin.
Do you remember anything else about your training?
Only the fact that we were always in four watches, so you had 3 nights ashore and one on board, which was good in barracks. So you could go ashore 3 times before you had to stay aboard 1 night.
And what did you do when you were ashore?
Well, pictures, theatre. I was always a keen theatre goer, because living where we did, I had live theatre quite handy, and I used to go to Kingston, Wimbledon, Streatham, all within easy bus routes, and I preferred live theatre to pictures. But if it was a run ashore with the boys, well, it was in the nearest pub.
What about opportunities for leisure when you were in barracks?
Well, there was billiard tables, darts in the canteens, excuse me, but otherwise I was mostly ashore. I used to like to be ashore, and in the summer I was down South Sea Front enjoying the sunshine, and that, I was always an open air person from the bicycle days. And then I got drafted to a defence unit, which we were in, based in a school in North End, Portsmouth, and there were 500 of us with a rifle and bayonet and 40 rounds of ammunition. Excuse me, and we had to defend a section of Farlington Marshes, and that was after the Germans had cleared through France and Dunkirk had finished, and we were waiting for the Germans to land. And there were 500 of us, fully equipped units with stewards for the officers and cooks, seamen and stokers. The stokers naturally looked after the fires in the school. It was a very big school, and all 500 of us were accommodated in it.
Do you remember the name of the school?
No, I don't really.
And do you remember when you were drafted there?
Yes, about the same week that Dunkirk collapsed. And
so that would have been
1940. 40. Yeah. And then eventually...
So that was after your training was completed?
Oh, yes. I was sent down there as a fully-fledged cook, although I wasn't, of course. But you had a leading hand in charge of each watch, and he told you what to do, and you did it. That was it. But then I got recalled to barracks. Oh, while I was there, I got one of my racing bicycles down from Portsmouth, from Epsom to Portsmouth. And I used to say to the lads, I feel sorry for you. They said, why? I said, well, those 70-ton tanks coming up the beach. And they said, well, you're in the same boat as we are. I said, no, I'm not. I said, you haven't got a bike like I have. I said, I'd be over Portsdown Hill at a rate of knots. But of course, it never happened. And so eventually I got drafted back to barracks. And when I went into barracks, I got drafted to the Queen Elizabeth, the 1916 battleship. And
when was that?
That was about September 1940. The Germans started bombing Portsmouth because they knew she was there. And she'd refitted and was nearly ready for sea. And I went home on embarkation leave, as they called it, and had the flu. And mother called the doctor in, our local doctor, and he gave her a note to say that I was unfit to travel. So when I got back, the Queen Elizabeth had gone, and because of the bombing, they taken her up to the Clyde to complete her refit. And so I was in barracks for about a month. And then I got drafted to a Fleet Air Arms Squadron, a squadron cook, because a Fleet Air Arms Squadron was a self-contained unit. They had 10 seamen to keep the messes clean, and we went to Arbroath in Angus on the east coast of Scotland, and that was the base where the squadron was formed.
And what was it called?
768 Squadron. It was HMS Condor, C-O-N-D-O-R, but it was a shore base, of course, and it was all fleet air arm, and we belonged to the squadron, the whole, there were 62 of us, and after they did a lot of training there, we had some new pilots had come there, and we had various types of aircraft. And then we were drafted to HMS Argus. She was completed in 1918. Her and Furious were the two oldest aircraft carriers in the British Navy, and the first. And Argus, I'm afraid, had more cockroaches than the Russians had men in their army. And
when were you drafted to HMS Argus?
About a month after we got up there, January 41. And we stayed aboard there about 15 months with new pilots, steaming up and down the coast of the west coast of Scotland, Argyll, the Argyll coast. And in Argyll was, near Campbelltown, was HMS Landrail, pardon me, where, which was another new air station, where if the pilots lost their nerve and couldn't land on the flight deck, they used to get instruction to go to Landrail, which was only a couple of miles in from the coast, and they'd land there. And then eventually they'd have more training on shore and then come back and join the squadron again.
From your point of view, what was life like in HMS Argus? Can you describe your working conditions?
Yes, we had a peculiar, what they called canteen messing, and each mess put its own food up, and the cook simply cooked it, and there were 560 of us on board. So in the galleys, it was quite a job. And a lot of the roast meals were cooked in the bakery, because they could put roast joints and roast potatoes and what have you into the baker's ovens.
Could you explain canteen messing in a bit more detail?
Yes, canteen messing. You drew your food from the Naffy canteen and the Pussas canteen, which was the naval canteen. You drew your food, each mess drew its own food. And then a cook of the mess was detailed every morning, and he would prepare the food and take it up to the galley, and all the cooks did was cook it. They wouldn't have to prepare anything. That was canteen messing, and that was mostly in small ships.
So how would that work if you've got a number of messes have put up food, different meals to be cooked? How did you organise that?
Well, each dish had a number on it, had a mess number, so they knew what they were looking for when they came up at 11:30 to get their own food for the various messes. And we had a Royal Marine unit aboard there as well, and a Royal Marine band, and they victualled the same as the lads, but of course they always called their mess about the barracks. The Royal Marines were the barracks.
But what I was trying to get at is, how did you cook all these different meals? I mean, they must have required different cooking times. And...
Oh yes, well, that was the skill of being a cook. You'd have two or three cooks around the main galley fires, and some would be stirring on top for stews, and some doing roasts in the ovens, and then a large quantity of the roasts, as I say, were done in the bakery, which had big open ovens where you pushed all your bread in the afternoon and evening. And so we got through quite well, quite easily.
How did, I mean, you must have had, I don't know how many messes on board.
Oh, there was probably 30, I should think.
So 30 different meals, different
Yes, all
types
different.
of meals to
Yeah,
cook.
they put up whatever. It depended what meat they got. You see, if it was stewing meat or roast meat, they'd put the meal up accordingly. And then their vegetarian, the vegetables that went with it, and everything was marked with a mess number.
Did you work a watch system?
Yes, we had to work a watch system, but in canteen messing, there was very few people had breakfast, and when you had money over at the end of the month, that was shared out among the mess people. So it often worked out that nobody wanted, they didn't want breakfast, so you didn't turn to till about 6 o'clock, and of course you couldn't cook too early because it'd be mostly bacon and that sort of stuff and eggs, so you did it at the last minute.
So, tell me about the watch system. How did that work?
Well, we were in more or less the same as the barracks, three or four watches, and so when you wasn't on duty, you was ashore if we were in harbour.
But how many hours was each watch, as far as you were concerned?
Well, it'd only be till lunchtime, and then nothing happened in the afternoon with canteen mess, and it didn't. Even in small ships, you couldn't cook anything in the afternoon. The next food started coming up at 4 o'clock, and they came up again at between 6 and a quarter past to take it away. That was for what we called dinner, but that was supper, really, and it was usually light stuff. And then you scrubbed the galley out. It was all white tiles. You scrubbed out with soapy water and cleaned everything, and you were finished by 7 o'clock, up past seven, at the duty part. And the other three watches, if you were in harbour, they went ashore.
So what I'm trying to get at is how did the watch system work on a daily basis?
Well,
Would
you
you
had
work one day and then
3 days off,
3 days off, or?
but everybody would turn to in the forenoon. But the watch that was on in the morning watch to do the breakfast, they finished at 8 o'clock, and they came back at 9:30 to help out until lunchtime. And that was, it worked out the same thing every day, but a different watch finished at nine, finished at 8 and came back at 9:30. So it was the same routine as, really, as it was ashore in barracks.
So one watch would work all morning.
No, three watches would work all morning.
Three watches would
Two
work
or
all.
three, depends how many watches you were
And
in.
then which watches would work in the afternoon?
Only the duty watch.
So only.
They'd be there making sure there was boiling water for tea and that sort of thing. And if anybody brought anything up special they wanted done, the one cook would do it. There'd only be one there.
And what was the structure of the cook's branch? How many cooks would be in a watch, and what was the hierarchy?
There'd be in the Argus, we had two chief cooks, one in the galley and one in the bakehouse. That's all. And I think we had one or two POs and a couple of leading hands, and there'd be about eight cooks. And that's why we went as squadron cooks to make up the numbers. If you had that extra, we had 56 men in the squadron, so you had two cooks to make up for the cooking of 56 men.
And how was the boat provisioned?
Well, if you were ashore sides, it came up on cranes and landed on the flight deck or the well deck. There was always a well deck in carriers, and you could swing the stuff in onto the well decks, and then it was taken down to the stores.
And would that be your job?
No, that would be seamen's jobs. That there'd be seamen detail for that and supply people.
So we're talking about provisioning the ship.
Yes. And
You were saying that the seamen would bring
the
the
stuff on
provisions
board
aboard.
and being checked by supply ratings. There'd probably be a petty officer there checking everything aboard to see that nothing was disappearing down into the messes. And then once it's in the store, of course, every day you go and draw your stores for the next 24 hours from each mess.
So you wouldn't go and get anything?
No, nothing to do with the cooks, no. No. And,
I mean, you must have liked this kind of messing, because it meant that you didn't have to prepare the
That's right, no preparing. Yeah. And you had it in small ships all the time. Destroyers and frigates and corvettes. They were all canteen messing.
What was your action station?
Usually fire party and stretcher party as cooks. That's in general service ships or ammunition in the magazines.
What, I'm asking your particular one on the Argus.
I think it was stretcher party. I believe it was stretcher party on there.
So what did that involve when action stations were called?
You just stood in various parts of the ship, that you had an instruction of where to stand. And if there was any action or any casualties in your area, you dealt with it. But it was a different kettle of fish in submarines. You had a different action stations.
Shall we come to that perhaps a bit later on? So you were a stretcher party?
Yeah.
What did that involve?
Well, it didn't involve anything, really, until there was trouble. If anybody was a casualty, then you had to deal with it. And there'd be a sick berth attendant probably with you. If you had... It depended how many sick berth attendants they had, and they spread them around the ship, one in each department. And I think we had two doctors in a carrier.
So you didn't have to go to the sick bay when action stations were called?
No.
So what would you do when action stations...
Just stand about board. For hours at a time, sometimes.
Whereabouts?
Well, in anywhere. Usually in a covered area, you hoped, so you didn't get wet or, you know, it was rainy. It was nearly always in a covered area. And, I didn't have anything happen while I was on Argus at all. I didn't have anything to do. It was just standing there being bored until you fell out action stations.
So, but I mean, were there stretchers positioned all over the ship?
You had so many, probably only two in each area, because you didn't expect to get more casualties than that.
So was there a particular station that you had to go to?
Well, everybody did. Everybody that was stretcher party, they had their one station that they always went to. And that didn't complicate things, you see, because they knew they'd got to go there. The same with the fire party. The fire party went to areas where there were hoses, and the big red things, you know, that you
fire
squirted on, fire extinguishers, that you used if you had a fire. But while I was on there, we didn't have a problem at all.
Can you tell me about your accommodation in the Argus?
Well, it was just the same as the barracks, just broken up into messes, and... You slung hammocks, of course, all the time in the ship. And usually you slung head to tail, tail to head. So that'd be a fellow's head and feet. And then this one, the next one, would be feet there, head there. So you alternated. You didn't sleep alongside each other.
You mentioned, presumably as cooks, you had canteen messing as well.
Oh, yes, we had... We had a cook's mess that all the cooks were in, from the leading hands downwards. The cooks and leading cooks would be in one mess, and the petty officers would be in with the petty officers' mess. They wouldn't have their own mess. And the chief would be in with the chief's mess, of course.
What sort of uniform did you have to wear on a day-to-day basis?
Well, in general service, you had to wear whites. White trousers, white jacket, white shirt, and a cap if you had a strict chief, but mostly nobody bothered to wear a cap. But we all had cook's caps that we should have worn, but we seldom did.
Is there any special badges on your uniform?
Yeah, you had a C on the right arm, which was blue on white, a blue C on white with a star. It was in a star. And so you could always be identified. But, of course, the cooks were the only one in the ship in white anyway.
What rank were you when you joined the Argus?
cook. He was assistant cook when you joined, and then eventually you became a cook. In those days, they called him a cook's mate. That was a cook. And then if you qualified, you passed for leading rate. And you was a leading rate, then petty officer, then chief petty officer. That's how it went up.
The Argos is quite an old ship when you joined.
1918, yeah.
What were the hygiene facilities like?
Well, you had very cramped bathing facilities. All you did was you stood in front of a bowl and slosh water over yourself. You couldn't do anything else. There was no showers, and no baths, of course. I think some of the senior officers had baths, but everybody didn't have baths. No.
What about laundry?
You did your own. You had a bucket with water in it. There was probably a laundry, I think there must have been a laundry on there for doing heavy stuff like blankets and stuff like that. But it was very primitive. They had a drying room, that's one thing, with racks on it, and the steam came up from the boiler rooms, and you could buy dry stuff in 24 hours. Whatever you washed would be dry in 24 hours.
What about opportunities for leisure or pastimes on board?
Nothing. They just played cards and dominoes and what did we call it? Housey-housey, which was Ludo. Ludo is a very favourite game in the Navy. there was nothing else, really. You couldn't have darts because it was too dangerous to throw darts about, especially if the ship was rolling. I don't think there was any dartboards on board.